Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior years shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. The May-June issue of 55 Plus magazine features Deborah Hughes, president of the National Susan B. Anthony Museum and House in Rochester. Her many career stops and life lessons along the way, which I'll share in the article, Protecting Susan B. Anthony's Legacy, prepared her well for that position. And as New York is celebrating the 100th anniversary of suffrage for women, 3 years before the 19th Amendment, suffragettes' legacy alive and well, and who was Susan B. Anthony, will round out the program. Now, protecting Susan B. Anthony's legacy. Deborah Hughes, vigilant in protecting beloved legacy, celebrates 10 years as the head of the National Susan B. Anthony Museum and House in Rochester by Deborah Blackwell. Perhaps it was her childhood as a minister's daughter growing up in the 1960s, or her own adult role as a minister that prepared her to succeed as president of the National Susan B. Anthony Museum and House in Rochester. Deborah Hughes's personal journey of discovery through theology and her understanding of human nature did just that. My passion is in people, what moves, what inspires them, and the social reform movement, said Hughes of Greece. Susan B. Anthony Anthony's life was during one of the times of greatest change in this country, and she had a passionate belief in we the people. I am committed to the stories and questions of social justice and human welfare, she added. Susan Brownell Anthony, born in 1820, was an American social reformer and women's rights activist who played a pivotal role in the women's suffrage movement. Hughes, 56, is celebrating her 10th anniversary directing the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House as New York State recognizes the centennial of women's suffrage. She said she finds it quite a connection between the 150-year-old historical landmark and the state of our nation today, as society debates the parameters of politics, religion, and rights of American citizens. The same questions we have now were surrounding Susan B. Anthony in her time. We had the revival, and they were having similar debates at the turn of the century. Hughes said, humans don't seem to learn as much as we might from prior generations. But Hughes did, and by surprise. Born to an ordained minister who worked not as a pastor but in ecumenical council, the youngest of four girls took the long road to her own work in the ministry. Hughes, the only sibling at home at age 10, moved with her parents from Rochester to Portland, Oregon, when her father accepted a job as director of clinical ministries there. Eventually, she attended the University of Oregon with a focus in pre-med, but changed her major several times, first math, then computer science, architecture, and even business. Finally, when she realized she had many more credits than needed to graduate, she shifted to religious studies, and the rest, she said, was history. My emphasis was in church history, although my natural aptitude was in math, science, and business, said Hughes. I was a preacher's kid in some ways, but I was a critic of the Bible because it didn't teach me what my parents taught me about God and faith. In 1984, Hughes moved back to Rochester to attend Colgate-Rochester-Crozier Divinity School to pursue biblical studies with an emphasis in language to gain more understanding of the scriptures. For me, it was a personal journey. When I thought about people in ministry, some of the leaders I most respected were graduates there, and I was curious. I wanted to have the knowledge to respond to my questions about the Bible with integrity, said Hughes. Exploring the Word. Her commitment resulted in a deeper understanding of the nature of humanity based on the Bible's messages about values. Hughes's study led her to the conclusion that the stories in the Bible are a call to being generous, kind, thoughtful, and welcoming to people who are labeled as outsiders. I found out that the stories in the Bible are more descriptive of human nature rather than prescriptive of how we should behave, she said. These are amazing stories about human nature, and it gives us something to align ourselves with, which couldn't be more relevant today. Anthony faced similar discussions at the turn of the century when some biblical critics thought if someone's religious affiliation results in how they respond to their neighbor, then they've missed the whole point, Hughes said. Because of that, she questions if humans learn as much as they might from history. It really is a good time to be reflecting on the past and thinking about what that means today. Social change is not something that happens overnight, and it's not an easy process. We are contributing to a larger movement with the smaller steps and choices we are making, said Christine Elradansky, city historian, City of Rochester. Deborah is an inspiration because she recognizes that within all of these movements, past and present, it really comes down to one thing, the fight for humanity. Like Anthony did in her time, Hughes dedicates herself to supporting causes for humanity as far away as Israel and El Salvador. Through the years, she has worked with the elderly, student, sexual minorities, women's interfaith coalitions, and AIDS Interfaith Network, and participated in national flood and hurricane relief in New Orleans and Elizabethtown. All of these efforts helped her witness what she refers to as an incredible capacity for tenderness and generosity that she feels humans learn in times of turmoil. When you go on missions and retreats, you really see the good and evil, and both are overwhelming, said Hughes. There is this deep, incredible joy that comes when people are really experiencing thankfulness. But there is also incredible pain and suffering that somehow humans can withstand. I saw some profound lessons over and over. Liberated. After receiving a Master's of Divinity from the University Rochester Divinity School in 1987, Hughes moved to Birmingham, Michigan, to become associate pastor of a Baptist church there. The move was surprising because her studies in seminary were primarily Presbyterian, but it was also her own discovery of her sexuality as a lesbian that helped her shift her life's path and purpose. Hughes spent 7 years answering her calling at the church in Birmingham before returning to Rochester to accept a role with the Ministers and Missionaries Benefit Board. The return to her roots not only offered her ongoing work in the ministry, she said, but provided her the opportunity to fully align herself with her own truths. When I got the job in New York for the pension board, it was so freeing for me. They had recruited me in part because I represented the LGBT community, she said. I got to come out as a lesbian, and I did pastoral care related to people with AIDS. It was a great job. Hughes's passion for theological exploration eventually came full circle when she left the Ministers and Missionaries Benefit Board to become the Vice President of Development for the Divinity School. A short time later, she became the Associate Pastor of the Third Presbyterian Church of Rochester. She never expected her ongoing work in the ministry would lead her to the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House in the 19th Ward. A friend sent me a job listing for executive director at the Susan B. Anthony House and said it looked like me, said Hughes. Well, I had no idea how to take care of a museum, but what really engaged me was that it sat in a city neighborhood with challenges, which ignited my questions about social justice and welfare. I was so energized. I knew it was where I was supposed to be. But it was not easy. In the middle of a renovation, the Independent Museum was facing serious funding issues, and, like her historical mentor, Hughes rose to the challenge. Susan B. Anthony had a lot of trouble funding her cause. Today, we have trouble funding women's history and women's issues, she said. We are vulnerable. At least 2/3 of our budget comes from donations, generous people who believe in what we are doing. That financial assistance, combined with her prior experience in nonprofit management, allowed forward movement for the restoration and the museum, and staying on task of maintaining a site that represents Anthony's life work. We had a very dedicated staff, tremendous volunteers, and a great board who understood the reality and who we were supportive and willing to make it a go, said Hughes. So we started to rebuild and increased our operating budget by more than $500,000. There is a piece of that that is just plain miracle, reaching new heights. Through the years, many others see Hughes's work as its own miracle. And in 2016, she was nominated for a prestigious Athena Award. The Women's Council of the Rochester Business Alliance, Incorporated presents the International Leadership Award to a local woman for outstanding professional achievements, collaborations, community service, advocacy, and inspiration. Hughes is currently nominated for Rochester Women's Network 2017 W Award, Women Inspiring Women, for women going above and beyond daily expectations to support, empower, influence, and inspire other women through her own example. The human condition is so complex and often so broken. Only those who can heal hearts can really move our world forward in a way that restores hope, said Nancy M. Watson in a recommendation of Hughes for the W Award. Watson is a retired University of Rochester School of Nursing associate professor and nationally recognized researcher. Without hope, the spirit dies, the pain overwhelms, the alternatives become bleak to self and others. This is what Deborah Hughes knew and led others to see, Watson said. Hughes sees hope with all of her work, from the callings of ministry to disaster outreach to sharing Anthony's history and integrity. Each day, in spite of the limitations of a small endowment, an issue for every arts and cultural organization, she said. Even though we have been operating paycheck to paycheck, I would rather spend our energy thinking about how we can tell Susan B. Anthony's story in ways that are engaging and exciting, said Hughes. We've been doing it for over 70 years, and we're going to keep doing it. When she's not working to keep that passionate story alive, Hughes directs her energy to her other passion, sailing. Last fall, she purchased a 32-foot sailboat named Trade Winds that she sails with her first mate and life partner for 5 years, Emily Jones. Jones is helping Hughes to fulfill her dream of becoming an accomplished sailor. Deborah's energy is infectious, her attention to detail is incredible, and her ability to fill a project with learning and laughter is what causes me to take on this sailing adventure with great joy, said Jones. Hughes is a mentor for the old and young, filled with creativity and energy, according to Louise Werner, the first lifetime member of the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House and 1990 Athena Award recipient, in a letter to the 2016 Athena Award Committee in Rochester. Deborah's authentic self and communication skills create confidence that is contagious, she said. Maintaining the foundation of Anthony's work feels like a natural fit for Hughes, whose own life's mission is to be true to her inner self while facing both challenges and triumphs with passion and purpose. She celebrates the authenticity that comes from history then and now. Some people don't find history interesting, Hughes said, but I didn't know it could be so much fun. And now, Suffragette's legacy alive and well. Rochester Museum keeps Anthony's ideology intact, by Deborah Blackwell. Deborah Hughes, president of the National Susan B. Anthony House and Museum, never expected to get a late-night text telling her that the NBC variety show Saturday Night Live just did an opening sketch featuring America's most famous suffragette, Susan B. Anthony. And she certainly didn't expect that it would be a satirical message about the current political climate on abortion rights. I had no idea it was coming. I woke up and looked at my phone, and then I saw the SNL clip the next day. It was good social commentary, but not historically correct, she said. It was the ending statement of the sketch on January 14th made by Kate McKinnon, playing the Anthony character, Abortion is Murder, that really caught Hughes's attention. According to Hughes, Anthony did not take on the issue of abortion, and to put a historical figure into current time does not always work, she said. Although Susan B. Anthony's history is very present in today's marches, it is not accurate to say she was pro-life or pro-choice, said Hughes. Anthony never made a formal statement we can quote about abortion, and we don't feel comfortable inserting interpretation. So, as a museum, we will not put words in her mouth, as much as we might love to. Although Hughes loved seeing how SNL accurately recreated the front parlor of the Susan B. Anthony house, addressing the unexpected dialogue on where Anthony stands on issues relevant today is challenging, she said. One of the challenges about being the director of the museum is we need to be nonpartisan. But here we are telling the story of one of the most political people who ever existed, said Hughes. We have spent years trying to clarify for people who Susan B. Anthony is and where the museum stands. Hughes's personal context to be politically engaged makes it difficult for her to find the fine line for herself, and says it's one of the greatest struggles she now faces on a daily basis. If we start quoting Susan B. Anthony, people would be shocked to hear echoes of the leaders of today. I see the spirit in reform and arc of justice because that's how we move forward and make positive things happen, she said. But the kind of threat that the current movement is to our society is creating a momentum that can be really bad. A century of transition. Anthony's lifetime between 1820 and 1906 was one of the times of greatest change in this country. America went through a civil war, and leading up to that, Anthony was an abolitionist who was very critical of a society that included people owning other human beings. Hughes said Anthony carried a passionate belief in we the people and equal rights for everyone, even the people you disagree with. That message is still visible by the number of people who continue to visit Anthony's grave, according to Christine L. Rudarsky, city historian. Last fall, more than 10,000 people lined up to pay their respects on Election Day 2016, some waiting more than 2 hours to place flowers, balloons, candles, notes, and the I voted stickers at Anthony's grave, she said. They were patient, they were respectful. This moment was significant, not just for people voting for Clinton. It was a momentous and historic occasion, voting for the first woman president, said Rudarsky. Even those who ended up being disappointed in the election results took away something good from the experience at the gravesite. WROC-TV8 in Rochester did a live Facebook stream from the cemetery that garnered 10 million live views and reached 23 million people, according to Rudarsky. National media outlets including CNN, NPR, USA Today, and The Washington Post also covered the special occasion. This year marks the 100th anniversary of the women's right to vote in New York. Rudarsky said the community is reflecting back on the history, what it took to achieve and reach this milestone, and what lessons can be learned from women winning that fight and applying them to today. Rochester and the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House are celebrating the anniversary with several special events throughout the year. Anthony's 200th birthday will be observed in 2020, as well as the 19th Amendment's 100th anniversary and the 75th anniversary of the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House. We have a passionate story and we want to keep telling it, said Hughes. Now something very special. Vote Tilla, July 16th to 22nd. The Votilla is a week-long navigational celebration in honor of the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage in New York State. A core group of canal boats will set out from Seneca Falls on July 17th and arrive in Rochester on July 21st. Throughout the week, Votilla boats will dock at several towns and villages along the route, where partner organizations will offer programming and excursions or add their own boats to the fleet. Community members can greet the passing boats and participate in special events. The last leg of the trip, titled The Last Mile, will be celebrated with a parade in Rochester on Saturday, July 22nd, and there will be a concluding celebration at the Anthony Museum on Madison Street. For more information, you can go to www.facebook.com/rocksuffrage, that's ROC suffrage, or call 585-235-6124. And now, who was Susan B. Anthony? A timeline. Susan Brownell Anthony, 1820 to 1906, dedicated her life to helping bring equality to women, minorities, and people whose voices were quieted by society. Known as the leader of the women's suffrage movement, Anthony was born February 15th in Adams, Massachusetts, and spent most of her life in Rochester, where she worked tirelessly to bring voting rights to all American citizens, regardless of race or gender. She helped fight against slavery and initiated and promoted many other causes, including equal pay for equal work, advanced rights for nurses, women in education, and women in publishing. The 19th Amendment to the Constitution, also known as the Susan B. Anthony Amendment, allowing all women over the age of 21 to vote, passed in 1920, 14 years after her death. And now the timeline. 1777, women lose the right to vote in New York and other states, followed soon after. Now, 1820, Susan Brownell Anthony was born on February 15th, second of seven children. 1845, the Anthony family moves to Rochester, New York. Their farm on what is now Brooks Avenue becomes a meeting place for anti-slavery activists, including Frederick Douglass. Anthony was 25 at that point. 1848, Elizabeth Cady Stanton held the first Women's Rights Convention in Seneca Falls, New York, called the Seneca Falls Convention. She proposed women's suffrage. 2 years later, the first National Women's Rights Convention took place in Worcester, Massachusetts, where more than 1,000 participants from 11 states attended. 1851, Susan B. Anthony attends an anti-slavery convention in Syracuse, New York, where she meets Elizabeth Cady Stanton. 1852, Susan B. Anthony attends her first women's rights convention. 1853, Susan B. is denied a voice in the World Temperance Convention in New York City. 1854, Anthony circulates petitions for married women's property rights and women's suffrage. She is refused admission and permission to speak at the Capitol and Smithsonian in Washington. She begins her New York State campaign for women's suffrage in Mayville, Chautauqua County. 1856, Susan B. Anthony becomes an agent for the American Anti-Slavery Society. 1857. She is now 37, and she calls for education for women and blacks at New York State Teachers Convention in Binghamton. 1866. Susan B. and Elizabeth Cady Stanton form the American Equal Rights Association, an organization formed to secure rights for all Americans, regardless of race, color, or gender. The association included both men and women, blacks and whites. 1869, Wyoming was the first territory granting unrestricted suffrage to women. Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton form the National Women's Suffrage Association, and Anthony calls the first women's suffrage convention in Washington, D.C. 1870, Anthony is now 50. Utah Territory grants suffrage to women, and the 15th Amendment to the Constitution removed voting restrictions for men based on race and color, but did not include verbiage to include a woman's right to vote. Stanton and Anthony oppose the amendment and continue their fight, arguing the 14th Amendment does allow women the right to vote. 1871, the Anti-Suffrage Society is formed. 1872, Victoria Woodhull of the Equal Rights Party runs for first female president of the United States, and Susan B. Anthony registers and casts a vote in Rochester, New York. She is arrested a few days later, along with several other women who are arrested for voting illegally. The next year, 1873, Susan B. is denied a trial by jury and fined $100, which she never pays. 1878, women's suffrage amendment is first introduced to Congress. 1890, the progressive era begins. Women from all classes and backgrounds enter public life, and the issue of women's suffrage becomes part of mainstream politics. The life and work of Susan B. Anthony, A Story of the Evolution of the States of Women, is published. Anthony establishes a press bureau to feed articles on women's suffrage to the national and local press. 1905, Susan B. Anthony meets with President Theodore Roosevelt in Washington, D.C., about submitting a suffrage amendment to Congress. 1906, Susan B. Anthony attends suffrage hearings in Washington, D.C. She gives her Failure is Impossible speech at her 86th birthday celebration and dies at her Madison Street home on March 13th. New York City, 1917. The New York State Constitution grants women suffrage, the first Eastern state to fully enfranchise women. In 1920, the 19th Amendment, known as the Susan B. Anthony, granting women over 21 full voting rights. Well, I'm always inspired by the Susan B. Anthony story, truly a role model for contributing to society well into her senior years. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.